Welcome to Inside West, a podcast where we reflect on lessons learned as we work to empower women toward greater economic power and resilience. We ask ourselves how to mine and share our experiences with others. If you're here, you care about gender equality and improving the lives of others. My name is Tammy Morris. I work to build our teams and transformative changes at West. In my working life, I am proud to have been involved in working as an advocate for people with disabilities, including neurodiversity, autism, and within many intercultural workplaces over the years. I'm thrilled to be able to learn and share with my colleague at West, Lynn Kane. Lynn has a master's in human resources, and she's been empowering women to build their skills and confidence as the coordinator of the Women in Skills Skill Trades Program, or WIST, as we refer to at West. Today, she is with us to share her insights on how we can all be better prepared to deal with conflict and microaggression at work. So welcome, Lynn.
Thank you very much, Tammy. It is a pleasure to be here with you today.
Thank you. So let's delve into our topic here. Can you perhaps tell us, for those who aren't familiar with the term, I think awareness is growing, but tell us a little bit about what microaggression is and perhaps with an example.
Okay, microaggression is more than just insults or insensitive comments or generalized jerky behaviors. They're assault on people's dignity. Usually they are racist, sexist, offensive, and really does play a major role in destroying sometimes the hope of people just because of actions or comments made by other people. It is often, it often appears as a compliment or a joke to another person, but it is heavily laden with insults about a group of people. Now, research has shown that microaggression, although seemingly small and sometimes innocent, it can take a serious psychological toll on the mental health of the recipients because of conscious, I would say, and sometimes intentional, unintentional actions of other people. It is definitely a discrimination based on all the categories if comments are made that are derogatory when you think about it in hindsight.
So you mentioned that microaggressions can overlap with racism. So could you perhaps give us an example or tell us how that happens?
Well, an example would be maybe a person who is from a different religious background, for example, coming into the workplace for the first time. Say, for example, a Muslim, they require sometimes to pray certain times a day or certain number of times a day. If that person comes into work and the employer starts to feel uncomfortable because this person needs time, 5-10 minutes to conduct their prayers, and making it very difficult for them or making comments about the time that they're taking away from work, that could constitute microaggression because it is something that you should know that if they are, you know, coming in, perhaps there's a possibility of them asking for maybe a 5-10 minutes in order for them to do their prayers. But failure to allow them to do so or comments that would say that would kind of suggest that they're taking time away from work to do their prayers, those could be, for that example, could be construed as a microaggression. Also comment about their dress, comment about things that they eat, things that they don't eat. Anything that describes an individual in a way that would be categorized as a racial or a religious or other comments, particularly that are not too flattering when you really look at the core question, that would be microaggression as well. And there's so many scenarios I can tell you about. For example, someone telling maybe a Black person or an Asian person, you speak so well or you sound so white. It sounds like a compliment, but really it is not a compliment. So like I said, I can give you a ton of scenarios or a ton of examples of what microaggression is, but we will go into that as we go through this interview.
So I think that there are some tools that you help to prepare women, and particularly as they're entering the workforce for the first time, and how to manage microaggressions in the workplace.
Can you tell us? Yes, absolutely. The first thing is to expose them to different types of training, for example. A lot of people who come to Canada might not be fully aware of this. And sometimes they could be victims or they could be perpetrators as well. But I think from the employer standpoint, it's more about providing training to their staff to help them understand what you can do and what you cannot do. Same thing as what you can say and what you cannot say. It all comes together in terms of diversity, inclusion, civility. It also has to do with cultural competence also. A lot of people who are in North America, their experience with the international world is always via TV. And so the actual experience is not there. So this is where we come in by providing them with that type of training. So they understand what decorum is all about and how to treat people as you want to be treated.
So oftentimes the instructions, that first step is to have a conversation with the person who's committed that microaggression, which can be, I'm sure, a very intimidating conversation to have. So could you tell our listeners how someone might handle themselves in that conversation?
Yes. If you feel you have been slighted by a colleague or maybe a member of the management team, I would suggest the first thing to do is, obviously there's something that has been playing on your mind and you feel as if you've been insulted or disrespected. I would suggest not to come up with the first, or not to be too fast or too quick to react, because chances are you might be making a mistake. It might be an inadvertent, comment that was made by a colleague, not realizing the effect of what they have said. So in that case, I would suggest you speak with that individual who made the comment or, you know, did that particular action to find out why they did it. It could be a simple conversation of you asking, you know, this thing happened this particular day. I was confused about why. Can you tell me, you know, what you meant by this? Give them the opportunity to explain to you why they did it. Now, based on what they explained to you, if it is in a positive light, you might want to mention, well, you know what, I'm glad I had this conversation with you because I kind of felt a little offended by it, but I'm really happy I spoke with you about this. There you go. The issue probably can be resolved in that manner. Hopefully the person that you have spoken with will make a mental note to ensure that this does not recur. On the other end, if it's something that continues, then there are other processes for you to escalate it after you have had that conversation with the person who refuses to abide by the rules of decorum. And maybe there would be a need for you to escalate it so that management can get involved to provide this person with the training that they need as well. So there are many, many steps, but the trick is not to react so quickly. You have to choose your battles, and you always have to have someone with whom, if you don't know what to do in particular, it's always good to have someone with whom you can verbalize your concern, verbalize the issue, and hopefully they will be objective in their recommendations to you in order to fix this problem going forward.
So what are the expectations for the HR department if there's a pattern, if that conversation doesn't go as well? Certainly we wish there were more of those conversations happening, but if it doesn't go well, if the person gets angry or there's crying involved, what are the expectations for HR to handle that situation?
Well, HR has the duty of care, that is for certain, when it comes to their employees. Making sure that you have provided the appropriate amount of training, especially as it relates to that particular subject matter. Remember, your company is, or the company is at risk of lengthy litigations, human rights abuses, and all of that. So in order to avoid these things from happening, it is always important for HR to listen to these issues and, of course, find solutions to that, holding the employee accountable for their actions. So if it's a first infraction on the part of an employee to another employee in terms of a comment or action, it is always good for HR to take an in-depth look as to why it happened, first thing. Secondly, is it something that can be mitigated through training? Then by all means, go ahead and provide the training to them and also have them sign some paperwork to acknowledge receiving the training and agree to adhere to the rules within the policy as it relates to maybe human rights abuses or maybe diversity or discrimination in terms of their policy. Once that employee has been trained and that employee has signed that paperwork to state that they will adhere to the rules, they will be held accountable if there are any future infractions. But at least the company would have taken the steps to mitigate that particular issue in order to help the other employees to coexist and be happy at work without fear of discrimination or retribution or retaliation on the part of the employer.
That's great. Any additional advice, perhaps for somebody who's in the workplace or entering the workplace, perhaps something doesn't feel quite right or has some anxiety about what they may intercept in that environment? Any advice that you give to your clients?
Absolutely. There are several different directions you can take. The first thing is, when you get to a new work environment, I always state that no man is an island. You always need someone. So if you're at work, entering the workplace in the beginning, take your time to figure out who might be a mentor or a possible mentor, someone, a go-to person, if not assigned. And typically the fear is that the go-to person that has been assigned to them by the employer might be on the employer side. So of course they are afraid to talk to that person about issues that are really bothering them. So here's what I always advise the clients. You have 5 or 6 different employment counselors at West of Windsor. These people are very professional. These people are very experienced. They have so much knowledge about the different types of scenarios. They know the employment laws. They know what's right and what's wrong in terms of how you are treated at work. So here's a tremendous resource for you. And I always suggest, if you feel that there are certain situations that are occurring at work, reach out to your employment counselor, explain what has happened, and the employment counselor will definitely provide you with suggestions for what you can do next in order to remedy this situation. Do not stay at home or just at work going through so much turmoil, so much hardship, when you do have a place to go to, which is West, and you do have people to talk to about scenarios that make you feel uncomfortable at work. And I always advise, you know, and sometimes people don't really take advantage of this, but I pretty much know my colleagues at West, and I know that they're there to provide you with guidance and to help you go through the different scenarios that you encounter at work, and to help you also in the retention of your job by providing you great scenarios, great recommendations for how you can improve your interrelationship with your colleagues, and so much more.
So that's great advice. So we, good luck on your journey, and of course to your women in skilled trades. And I think that was great advice for folks to not hesitate to reach out to West for training, right? For job seekers or for employers. And leadership and advocacy on these issues. So thank you. We know that West is changing lives every day, and we appreciate your big role in that. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tammy. Thank you very much.